This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, everybody, here in the Warrior Soul Universe? Warrior Soul Universe. I don't know where I get these things sometimes. Anyways, my name's Chris Albert. Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This week on the podcast, we've got Ben Davis. Ben is a U.S. Army veteran, and he is an ultra marathon runner. Now, guys who do this sport absolutely fascinate me as it is. They run, you know, 50 to 100 miles or sometimes more than that, and it is absolutely brutal, and they've just got this remarkable ability to endure. But Ben isn't your typical runner. You know, he is 6'2". Right now, he's about 230 pounds. He used to be 400 pounds, and he lost a bunch of weight that he had gained in his own fights after he got out of the military. And today, he's running these marathons. He's got a full-time job, works as an engineer. And he started something called the Arsenal of Hope. So in addition to being an engineer, he's also got a bunch of certifications in training and in understanding human performance. And so basically the Arsenal of Hope is a free coaching system for veterans who want to do something that's pretty much physically crazy, like going out and running 100 miles. So Ben's a really interesting and smart individual. I absolutely loved speaking with him, had a great, fantastic conversation. And Ben was introduced to me by the good people at F-Bomb Nutrition, the remarkable sponsors of this podcast, really awesome individuals. They make awesome, delicious packets of fats. They're really awesome, and they make their macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, mix them up with sea salt, mix them up with pecan butter. So delicious. You can get 20% off of your first order by heading over to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout. These guys are amazing. That's why they're sponsors of the show. They're great people. They're sending boxes of this stuff overseas to the troops of the front lines so they can supplement their MREs. Really great. You know, and beyond that, I hope you guys are doing well out there. I'm recording this on Valentine's Day. By the time you get it, it'll be the Monday after. But I love you all. Let's get into the interview. What's going on, Ben? How you doing today, man?
I'm good. How you doing, Chris?
Doing awesome. Doing awesome. You are out in Detroit area, right?
That's correct.
What is the temperature like out there? I hate talking about the weather or the first thing, but what is the temperature out like that out there right now?
Well, it's a bit of a mixed bag. Yesterday was, I think, 18, but today it's in the mid 40s.
Okay.
So
that's a little bit warm. Right. And the reason.
Yeah.
The big reason why I'm getting into the temperature here is because Ben is an ultra endurance guy, and he's out there plugging away a lot of times in below zero temperatures, and that's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, it's kind of where you get used to it, I guess. So we were at negative 40 last week with wind chill, so. That was a good day to not go out, but yeah, it gets pretty cold here at times. So
awesome. So tell us a little bit about your story and arsenal of hope. You started out in the military, and then now you're doing this. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Arsenal of Hope came about in kind of a, I don't know, by accident, because I've always wanted to do something to give back to the veteran community. And obviously been in the Army for 6 years, and with deployments under my belt, and you see, going through the VA system, you see how people are treated, but you don't know what you can do to make a difference. And so my background, when I got out, I went back to school, and I went through and did my undergrad and graduate school in kinesiology. And I don't know if I was going to go to medical school or PT or whatever. I didn't really have a direction. I just wanted to help. And I saw that you could do some really cool things in kinesiology. And so the big driver behind that was, do you remember that show Sports Science?
Yeah.
It was on Fox, and then it was on ESPN Now. Well, the person who oversaw that, she actually was a professor at the school I chose to go to. And so that's why I went there, because, like, well, how can we do these things to measure, and what can we do to make it better? And prior to my time in the military, I was actually a professional soccer player. And so I played in Europe and in Romania. And so I left that career after 9/11 to join the Army. And so I'd always been an athlete my whole life, and working in those environments, and it's always been fascinating about how we can make the body do what it shouldn't be able to do. And so went back to school, and you know, I started in grad school. I was going through and doing a lot of work with training protocols for PTSD and TBI. How can we use a holistic approach to do that, as opposed to, you know, pharmaceuticals and medication? Because I lost 13 friends to suicide in the course of about 3 years, from 2008 to 2011. And they, all the same thing, all combat arms guys, all out to deployments and on the same cocktail of pills. And I think there's got to be a better way to do this, and we're failing veterans. And so I went through, and that's what I was working on. And the foundation I was working with doing my research, we lost funding, and I kind of had to find a regular job. And this time I was also coaching in like performance training, strength conditioning, and I was coaching soccer as well, collegiately. And so once I lost this funding, I kind of get a normal job. And so I got into engineering. And so I kind of put everything on the back burner, because I have a family and I needed to make money. And so I got into engineering. And myself, as someone who has like a fake hip and a whole laundry list of injuries that you just accumulate, you know, I just kind of let things go. And really, after I had my surgery, I was told I'd never actually be able to run again. That's one thing I guess I probably should have mentioned, was when I got out, I had to have a hip surgery. And the doctor said, you're never going to run again. You're always going to be in pain. Your life is going to be chronic pain. Here's some meds. Here's whatever. And so, and then I was let off into the real world. So I never wanted to live that life. And so I figured there's got to be a better way. So that was, again, another driver into understanding, you know, studying kinesiology. And so at that time, I was never really, when I got out, I was not like I was physically when I was in. I was not in shape. I was still strong. It can move. But over the next course, the next 9 years or so, I guess 2009 to 2017, I started just to gain weight. And no matter what I tried, you know, I'd make some progress and I'd backslide. Make some progress, have some backslide. And it got to the point where I was almost 400 pounds. And it was December 2016, so going into January 2017, I was just at a really low point. And so even though I had this background and wealth of knowledge, and I've even helped people recover and help themselves, I never helped myself. And so for a variety of factors. And so anyway, so flash forward. So I got into, I started getting into podcasts through a whole different things. And so I started listening to some, and I came across a ketogenic diet. And so
hold on one second. I do want to get into that, but I want to ask you a little bit more about this time period, right? So number one, what did you do in the Army?
I was a grunt. So I was the infantry stuff, and then some offshoots from there as well. So, some other specialized training and other things. And so did some high speed stuff, did a lot of low speed stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I was, I'd like to say I was remarkable, but I'm not. I was never really remarkable in terms like that. I had a good career, and I had a lot of fun, and I had a lot of friends, and I spent a lot of time away from home, and so.
Well, less than a very small percentage of the military is actually grunts, actually infantry. And so that does mean, as a fellow infantryman, I like to say that. So absolutely, man.
So, I mean, it was, it was what it was. It was the best worst job I think you can have. And so where you get to do a lot of cool things. And when you get out into the regular world, you have no transitional or applicable skills. And so, but you have a good ride while you're there. So,
Well, you get leadership skills, people skills. And I think that's extremely translatable. You also get the ability to think about problems in ways that most people won't. So that's something I think you carried over too, right?
Oh, I mean, for sure. Like I've spoke with executives at companies in advocating for veterans. Hey, listen, you know, like they might not have an MBA. Some might not even have degrees. And I actually had with a really high level person where I currently work, I had a conversation with them, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, veterans do great in our factories and in manufacturing. And I said, well, if you marginalize a veteran to that's what they can do, make widgets and push a button. I said, then you're missing out, because we do have all these crazy leadership skills, working under pressure, understanding, you know, commitment to get the job done without, you know, letting things come in the way. And so, you know, for me, with what I do, I talk it down, but for what a veteran brings to the table, one of the reasons I'm successful at my day job is not because I know what I'm doing. And truth be told, I don't really know what I'm doing most of the time. But what I do is I don't let little things get in the way, like, oh, this person never emailed me back, or this person didn't call me. I will physically go to that place to talk to that person or to a supplier to make sure that parts are ready. And I do those things. If I get locked out of a building, there's been times where I've just climbed the fence and which, you know, it's laughable in hindsight, but, you know, I've worked 36 hours straight in a white collar job. That's crazy, because most people are like, if I'm not getting overtime, I'm going home, or if I'm not getting paid for it. And to me, it's about getting the job done. And those are those great soft skills that vets do have.
Right.
And so a lot of vets, I guess I can't speak for everyone, but.
Exactly.
The people that I know.
That's huge, man. I mean, those soft skills, being able to adapt, being able to overcome, being able to outwork people, but also having that ability to speak to people in a way that I think is influencing, right? A lot of people think of veterans as being these hard edge people who you know, and people in the military that just yell to get things done, but it's really the art of influence, and it's really the art of knowing people and starting relationships with people. And that's amazing. Now you said you had to have hip surgery. What happened with your hip? What was going on there?
Well, a whole lot of things, but there were incidents that did happen. But cumulatively, when you do things like you run five days a week on top of all the calisthenics and then the weight training, with where I was at, we doing PT twice a day, or you know, exercise, physical training twice a day was commonplace. Sometimes you get three times, and then your whole job is physical, right? So a lot of that was just not taking care of the things, because the new modified PT wasn't there. It was just, all right, we're going to get information, you know, right face, forward march, you know, and then you're going to pick up and run.
Right.
And so those, you know, the proper way to do things isn't as much there. It was just doing it because that's how it always been done. With that being said, there's some great things you can take away from that, and is that thoughtless thing, and it's that you're just going to do it and just do it and do it and do it. Unfortunately, you're going to break down at some point. Specifically for me, I was getting ready for a selection process, and so I was kind of I was decided. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try to go to this unit, and so I was, you know, we were doing like 40 mile ruck marches. The training was like 40 miles over land. Mm-hmm. You know, ruck marches. And, you know, I end up, if you're in like, I know the train area at Fort Campbell, you're in the back 40 there. And there's a lot of just sinkholes, potholes that you don't see.
Yep.
And one of those ones, I just stepped right in and it went down, and kind of a Bambi splits type thing. And carrying, you know, 75 pounds. So that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. So, And that was the one that it's pretty much tore everything. And they're like, yeah, you have to have a complete, you know, reconstruction. And it was pretty gnarly, but I mean, it is what it is. There's a lot of people that had a lot worse than I did. So.
Yeah. And this is the thing. And what years was this been?
2003 to 2009.
Yeah. A lot of people don't, I went into the Marine Corps in the '90s, 1999. I was there 99 through 05. And, a lot of people don't realize this, but the training we did back then, and I'm not just talking about like, you know, the field training, but everything we did back then, our mentality toward PT, our mentality toward exercise, our mentality toward nutrition, I think that aged a lot of us prematurely because, you know, you're doing all this steady state work. And then on top of that, you got your physical job and then you're putting a lot of inflammatory nutrients into your body. You know, and I remember looking at guys back then, I was 19. I would see like a first sergeant who was, you know, maybe 35, but he looked like he was 65, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. And it's my understanding things have gotten a lot better, at least in the Army. I can't speak for the Marines or anyone else, but I know that they've gone to modify a lot of those standards.
Yeah, they've done it in the Marine Corps too.
But you get beat up, and it's just a job that you love, and they don't love you back, or you hate it, but you hate it so much you love it, or you know, one of those kind of things. The power of adversity and the relationship you have with adverse circumstances, and so.
Exactly. So you get this hip surgery and they're telling you, you'll never be able to run again. Right. What's going through your head at that point?
Well, I mean, I don't know if is there a rating on this in terms of like, you have to keep it at a certain level or. I said, F you, sir.
You can curse
at the naval hospital.
You
know,
curse.
He's like, okay. I wanted to be respectful. And I said, F you, you know, and I said, sir, you're full of shit. And, I said, that's not happen. And he just laughed at me and he's like, okay. He's like, what do I know? I'm only a doctor. And I guess he was like one of the top, you know, orthopedic surgeons in the Navy. And so, fortunately for him, I didn't go through them because he's like, all right, it's going to take 9 months. And it was through a serendipitous kind of thing that I was able to see a civilian doctor who was the team doctor for the Tennessee Titans and the Nashville Predators. And he'd done stuff for the Olympics and he invented a surgery that was it made it possible to not have the same things as you would have if, like, from a traditional hip replacement, all that same time. And so I was really able to see one of the cool things was, and this has really influenced me, was how much time that not only he but the PTs and all the people there spent with me going through the process. And so and I don't know if that was because I was a soldier or because, you know, full disclosure, like, if you've ever seen, I'm a big guy, you know, right now I'm about 235. I'm 6'2", 235. I look like a linebacker, so I'm pretty sure at the time I think people thought that I was like a player for the Titans. Maybe that's why they work so much with me or not. I'm not sure, but that really showed that just the amount of time that people would invest in you, it made it more feasible to know that, okay, well, I'm going to be fine. I can recover from all this and I can go. And so
that's awesome.
You know, it gave me hope.
That's awesome.
Relationships. And so,
that's awesome. And so how long in the recovery was it from the surgery? Were you, how many months?
I mean, I had it in February by June, I could actually kind of jog, and by August, they wanted to redeploy me.
Wow.
And so I had a more of a, how do I say this? For me, I was at the time, like, I was hit overextended I was extended like medically. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, you know, so they didn't think I was going to recover. I recovered, and by the time I recovered, I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go. I want to get out. you know, because I didn't want to be in the Army. You know, I had served my time, I'd done my stuff, and so. But because of the shortages of just the MOS and, you know, the shortage of NCOs, they were like, okay, well, guess what? You have something that we can use. So you're going to go to Afghanistan again or Iraq again. Or, and I'm like, that's not how it's going to work. And so, to me, I felt like I could go and I felt recovered in August. Mm-hmm. And when I say recovered, that's Army, that's like military. Recovered, you know, like really honestly, it's probably at like 60%. If I really am honest with how I felt, it was performing, but you know, a 60% for someone who has that mindset of, you know, go, go, go. That's generally about 85-90% of a normal person that doesn't put themselves in those situations. And so, I really felt like I was, you know, and I was extra motivated to get out and either I was going to start contracting or that was kind of the goal. Was to start contracting. I had some friends that did that, and so I was like, that's what I was going to do. And so, and then I didn't. That's another story. So,
wow. So you're there, you're at 60%, and then so you continue on with your military career. You went on another deployment?
No, I got out. I had already.
Or you got out, right?
It took some. So it took some time and some nuance and finesse and understanding understanding the Army regulations and what you can and can't say and what you can and can't do. And so to me, I'd already served my time.
Right.
You know, and when I was pursuing, I'm like, listen, I'm right now I'm medically extended. And, you know, with so many deployments that I'd done and, you know, in just that 5 years leading up to that, I was, you know, I had already had so many deployments. I was gone for almost 3 years of that time. And so, I was having people tell me that I was, you know, like, you know, I was a shit bag and I was, you know, trying to sham and get out things. I was like, whoa, 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 I've done my time. You know, I've done my share, you know, and I don't mind going, but this is the other thing you don't realize is that the chronic stress of everything as well. And so that was some of that was the PTSD and the inability to think clearly and regulate emotion as well. But, I mean, it was an adventure getting out and, but I got out and, everything kind of evolutions of things happened since then.
that's a funny thing about the time too, because I think, you know, a lot of times there was different periods, like I got out, I came back from my last deployment on the day Saddam Hussein got captured. Right. And so, I'm looking at the news and I'm like, oh great. War's over. Right. So left. I'm like, and then, I went, I had to have my ankle reconstructed, right. My right ankle reconstructed. And so, I go and I do that. And then, before I know it, you know, I'm looking at the news and everything's everything happened in Fallujah and then everything's getting intensified again. And a lot of my guys are going back and, you know, I think the thing is this, a lot of us, we try to get down on ourselves for when we get out, but you did your time, you know, you did your duty and, you know, timing is a big thing in this war that we just been through. Right. And so people have different experiences in different periods. I hate when anybody tries to denigrate anybody else's service just because of that, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was 23 when, I'd been to school for a little bit, left school and had a career, you know, I say career, quote unquote. And then I was 23 when I joined. So I wasn't young. I mean, I wasn't the typical 18-year-old that gets in. And so some of these things, I'm like, I didn't feel, yeah, I wanted to deploy. I wanted to do some things, but I also knew that I was so spun up that, you know, there was something not right and I needed to be done. I needed to move on and get out. And so, you know, you always miss your guys, but you always want to be part of that. But with some of the things I was doing, I was if it was in an advisory capacity or whatever, it did make it a little, you know, it's a little easier, but again, like I'd done my time and it was, really one of those things where it was kind of unethical what they were trying to do, like guilt me or just talk, you know, the way they were talking. It just, I don't know. Like I said, you know, I look back and when you're dealing with PTS and TBI and things like that, you can't, you were never the same person, you know, like when I come back now and the changes I've made in my life, you know, but you're a completely different person, you know, especially when you're out with those such, you live such a temporary life when you're in, especially when you're deploying and, you know, and so.
No, I get that, man. Absolutely. How'd you get into ultra marathoning? Because, you know, it's somebody 6 foot two, you know, mid 200s and pounds. It seems like it would be, wouldn't be the easiest sport to get into, right?
Yeah, no, the big motivator was for me with a lot of things is people telling me I can't do something.
Right.
And so I think back to those doctors that said, you'll never run again. And I can be semi-active, but it's always going to hurt. Like it always did hurt. And so getting up to about 400 pounds and, you know, for me, when I changed my diet and just through dietary changes, I lost so much weight and all of that, but I actually felt good. And, you know, the anti-inflammatory properties that come that are sequelae of a low carb diet, obviously, are, you know, for because of that. And so when I started exercising again and, you know, some of the psychological factors of it is that, you know, for me, like a few years, you know, post military, it's like, yeah, I'm not running because it hurts, but I can lift because I'm strong. I'm a big, strong guy. And so, okay, well, I'm just going to lift heavy things because I can at least that will go with how I look. And that's a psychological component. Well, that's all I can be. That's all I can do. And, you know, it makes sense. And you know, that when you lose 20 pounds, you gain 40 pounds, you lose 30, you gain 60 and you play those games. And, for me, like I said, I was at a low point. I have four kids, you know, fairly successful professional in terms of, you know, having a stable job or mostly stable job, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, but I was miserable. I wasn't achieving things. Like it would take me 45 minutes to get out of bed. I'd lose my breath. You know, just putting on my shoes and that kind of thing. It was like, it wasn't the kind of example I wanted to be for my kids.
Right.
And it wasn't, and you know, it's almost like, you know, better, but nothing really ever worked for me. And so once I had lost all that weight, I felt good from a cognitively, you know, emotionally, psychologically, physically, you know, I've lost 100 pounds and I'm like, so I'm still running around, you know, 300 pounds. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to start jogging again, you know? I'm like, this is great. And so I was able to start jogging and run and put together 10-mile runs. And I was like, why are we still in? I had a VA appointment randomly enough and dealing with, you know, PTS and TBI. And you see people, you know, other vets, then you interact and you talk. And I'm like, why don't more people know about this? Why, you know, why does this guy have 9 prescriptions? And, you know, for things that are a toxic cocktail and who knows what's going to happen. He's never going to get ahead. And so I've lost friends. I'm sure you have. We all know people and we don't need this stuff. If we kind of change those things, how can we can bring hope to people? You know, for me, like I could do things that I hadn't been able to do for years, you know, for decades. And, so I was like, I got to spread the word. What can I do? I was like, and a few years ago, I told one of the counselors at the VA, I was like, yeah, I want to run a half marathon, try it out. They laughed at me and told me I'm stupid, mm-hmm. you know, try something like that. I'm like, well, everyone's telling me I can't run because I'm too big or I can't because I'm whatever. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to run. And I'm like, well, maybe do a marathon. I'm like, well, you know, every year, 100,000 people, 200,000 people do marathons. I'm like, I'll do an ultra marathon. That's even bigger. I'm like, you know what? People do those. And I'm like, why not do one a month? And so that should help raise awareness, spread attention and say, hey, you know, this person who's not a runner clearly is, you know, can do it. And so, and I did it, you know, using fat-based, like a ketogenic style fueling plan, which in all honesty is probably a hack, which, you know, in terms of making it easier for longevity and recovery and all these other things and performance, if I was 100 pounds lighter. And yeah.
You started this journey out at 400 pounds, right?
Like 395, 394, you know, just under 400 pounds.
Yeah. And so, wow, that's insane. You know, and And, you know, you're talking about the power of essentially a low carb ketogenic diet, right? And I suffered from, I was a bodybuilder and powerlifter, and, you know, I had a lot of the same kind of things as you going on, but I'm much smaller than you. I'm a little short guy, but I got myself up to, about 230 pounds, 5'8". And, you know, I was having some of the same things, low energy. The only time I ever had energy was when I was lifting weights in the gym, and I started suffering from ulcerative colitis and, an autoimmune disease. And nearly killed me a couple of times. And so I kept asking the doctor, is there any nutritional changes that I can make? And they said, the nutrition doesn't matter. Just take your medication. And, I did my own research. I found out more and more about the ketogenic diet and, you know, the power of fatty acids like butyrate to rebuild your intestinal tract. And, it did wonders for me. And not only did it do wonders for me, it also helped me increase my performance as a powerlifter. I got stronger than I ever was, and I had more energy to do other things like jujitsu and doing more and more high intensity training. So I was healthier and I was more capable. So I definitely, I'm with you on this, the power of this diet to reduce inflammatory processes in the body, and not only to help you feel better physically, but also to feel better mentally. Because my mental energy went skyrocketed. It helped me with my business, helped me with my mood, helped my relationships, helped everything. But a lot of times I would tell people this, and I was on YouTube and told people a lot about this. But people would call me a fool, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's, it's hard to because you're always going to have people. And unfortunately now keto is getting very mainstream. So I try not to, that's not my cross to die on. Right.
Right.
I would say carb reduction, low carb. I try to avoid that word for that, mm-hmm. For that purpose. And once you can establish kind of a framework of trust, then you can get to know, you know, then you can start to explain why.
Right.
With keto, but you're not going to give it an elevator pitch. The other thing is that, like, I have, like, you name the health and fitness organization, like, I have their certifications. I have over 50 different ones from, you know, NSDA, ACSM, NASM, you know, CrossFit, USA, Weightlift. Oh, I have all these, you know, like, everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. But are you going to take advice from someone who is, you know, 354 pounds? You know, that doesn't look, or, you know, and I've done some kind of consulting, you know, education work for a big box, gym company. And the best trainers they had were the best being most profitable, were actually the worst trainers.
Right.
You know, in terms of like, you know, clients at risk and things like that. And the best trainers were generally the lower selling ones in terms of revenue and profit, because they don't push things and they don't this, but they might have. You know, bachelor's degrees and, you know, exercise science, and they have multiple certifications. But the people who are the most successful ones they aesthetically look like they're fit, and so people see that. And so to me, it's one of those, is that I have to get myself in a place where I can convince people, because you got to pass the eye test. And so for a long time, it was like I always wanted to do some things, whether it be with RWB or Wounded Warrior, but I can't be an advocate for health and if I don't look that part.
Right.
And so people don't care how many pieces of paper and acronyms you have after your name. You got to pass the eyeball test. And so, so to me, that was one of those things where I kind of given up on that, because I tried, you know, everything, you know, mm-hmm. leading up to this. And, I was like, well, it's going to be, you know, I'm just going to be a big guy, and maybe I can, you know, drop 20, 30 pounds and get a little better. And, yeah, I didn't have a lot of hope for that, you know. Right. So
that's one thing that used to drive me insane, because, you know, people would keep training with these kind of fitness model types who had, because I used to own a very, very, popular gym called Metroflex Gym in Long Beach. And, I would be training my clients. I'd be looking around and, you know, we'd have, certain people in there who had very, very, you know, well-defined physiques, great musculature, who were trainers, but they were crappy trainers. And they'd be sitting there looking at their phone, not paying attention to the client, having the client do these risky ass moves without, you know, paying attention to the form or anything like that. And they'd continue to work with this trainer, even though they weren't paying attention, you know, and it was just, you know, and I used to rip a bunch of people, new assholes because of that. But, you know, it's kind of the state of the fitness industry and the social media world where, you know, the aesthetic is everything, but not only the aesthetic, it's that image of being a baller and like, you know, trying to carry that $1 million image. And a lot of people are faking it, until they make it. And, you know, it's kind of a scary thing because you're playing around with people's health.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I feel the same way in ultra running, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I know exactly what you're talking about, and you're missing, you know, those things that you'll never truly be fit, and a six pack won't give you that, or whatever it is, you know, if it's whatever you're looking for, those aren't going to make you happy. You know, like fitness is there's so many different facets to it, and so you know, there's a fitness component, there's an exercise, you know, there's a nutritional component. There's also that psychological component and that emotional component to it. And if that void's not being met, you can try as hard as you want, you know, and a six pack isn't going to make you happy again. You know, it's not going to get those things that you really need. And so that's one of those things where, you know, like, again, working with people, and it's about changing lives. It's, you know, and if that's your goal, if you want that kind of thing, yeah, well, I guess we can, you know, there's things that we can do to help you, you know, like as a trainer, like, yeah, I get you, we can do that. But, you know, realistically, if your genetics don't allow you, you're probably not going to have a, you know, an aesthetically pleasing six pack. You know, I'm like that kind of guy where mine don't, you know, when my abs are showing, they don't look great. You know, like my brother has that surf, you know, like he's long and lean, he's 6'4", you know, like 185. And he's this guy always has that model build. I don't have that. I'm, you know, I look like a, you know, a power lifter. I look like a linebacker, you know? And so, and I don't really care. I'm happy with that, you know? Yeah. So
you look like a man. You look like a man. That's awesome. You
know? But then that's, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, to me, it's about at this juncture in my life is one helping even a lot of people that I see and deal with in terms of the veteran community. They're not looking to get six packs. They're looking to figure out how to, you know, unfuck their life.
Right.
You know, because they got, you know, like they don't have those components. They have no hope because, you know, their injuries are limit them, you know, and really in all honesty, it's that space between their ears that limits them, but they don't know that because one thing we're good as is veterans is in our previous life, we're taking orders. So we're always kind of, we do what we're told. So if we're told, hey, you're going to be in pain, take these pills, you're going to do it,
right?
Because that's what you're told to do. And there's that level of respect. And so until we can break cycle, you know, then it's not going to change. And so, the hope is to kind of, you know, at least put a dent in it,
right?
And start making a difference. And whether that's getting people out, and there's lots of organizations that get people out. Like I've been more involved with Team Red, White, Blue, and, some of the stuff they do is great, but if you can hardly walk, do you really want to get out and run?
Right.
No, you know, so we want to get to the point where they can get involved with those things.
No, that's awesome, man. I want to know about your first ultra, right? Cause that's gotta be like the most painful race you ever run there. I'm sure there's more painful ones, but it's the most mentally destabilizing race, right? So tell me about your first ultra. And how did it go? And what did you do to get through it?
So this is not like the caveat thing, but I decided to do these ultras in November. Mm-hmm. And so again, I'm still losing weight. I've only been running for, you know, again, for by that point, maybe a month or two. And so, it wasn't a well thought out plan. And so, to do that, probably, and in hindsight, I probably should have waited, you know, but that being said, I decided to do these ultras, and I think it was around November. So just January 1st or January 6th, I ran that first one. Now, it was on the west side of the state, Michigan, which is just gorgeous in terms of if you're into the outdoors. And we just hit this, it's called a bomb cyclone, which I don't know if you probably don't get those out in where you're at. But it's a massive drop in temperature, like polar vortex kind of thing. And so the actual temperature was in the negative 10, negative, I've heard conflicting reports. You know, some people say it's cold, negative 20, and it's a couple feet of snow. Now, to make matters worse, I for whatever reason, this very specific layering system that I prepared for this, I didn't, it wasn't where it was supposed to be in my bag. And I must have forgot it because, again, all the nerves of packing the first one. And so I didn't have the actual cold weather gear that I needed. So I ended up running I had a sweatshirt.
Was it cotton?
So I had a Merino, World t-shirt and a Merino layer under it, and then a cotton sweatshirt.
Oh my God. And for those of you who don't know, when it comes to cold weather, where there's a saying, it's called cotton kills, right?
Yeah. So the savior was the Merino wool, which is great. Yeah. But all that being said, not that there's any savior. So I had the water I was carrying, because I'm like, at that point, I'm like, I need to carry as much water and fuel as I can, which for me, I used F-bombs and pickles and some walnuts and then the water. So I had like the 100 milliliter soft flasks and then a Camelback, a 3 liter Camelback, which in my workup to that, I was like, yeah, that's fine. You know, that's enough. In my training, I timed it out. Well, I knew nothing. I didn't factor in insulating water bottles or any of that stuff. So that's all that water froze. It froze. And so I was just carrying around like solid weight. Like when I say froze, I mean, it was a rock, like it was frozen solid. Mm. And so the only thing I had was some like the pickle juice. So getting to those aid stations and things was rough. And then to make matters worse, I if you've run an ultra, like every race director is like, oh yeah, the course is really well marked. And they say that because that's like their home course. They know how to run it.
Right.
If you're not from there, it's not well marked. And with all the trampling and the snow and everything, you know, I had taken a slight detour and followed like a snowshoe path because it all looked the same to me. Mm-hmm. And because everything, again, there was like, you know, foot and a half snow or whatever. And so, I mean, it's like being on just like a frozen forest, something you'd see in a Disney movie or something like that. It was really awesome, actually, and very, very cathartic. But so with that loss and everything, I ended up doing, it was supposed to be 225K loops. And I ended up doing, 25 miles on the first loop. And then, it was a pretty technical course, which didn't make things better. So I ended up finishing with like, I ended up doing like 27 miles, but because it was so cold and we had lost light, I didn't have a mat, like a headlamp. And they at the race director, the race people were like, you know, we don't want to be here till like 10 at night. I ended up dropping from the race, but I had, in essence, I had run an ultra. So I'd run the distance. I just didn't finish the race just based on, for me, what I felt like was safety. Like a safety concern. I'm like, I don't want to fucking die out here.
Right.
So I technically did run an ultra for the first one. And I felt actually amazing. And it was so cold, in all honesty, that I didn't feel anything. So when you say painful, it wasn't painful. It was, even what psychologically, it wasn't painful because, you know, when you do extreme land nav, like you know that you always doubt yourself, you know, especially when you first learn land nav. And I'd done so much land navigation that I knew, I'm like, oh, these waypoints and these flags are going to come up. They're going to come up. And, you know, so I just kept going and kept going and kept going and just trusting myself. And, I trusted myself too much and I probably should have doubled back. But so I didn't really have a lot of anxiety when I was out there. And truth be told, I wanted to come home to my kids and not die. So I didn't feel bad about, again, it's technically a DNF, even though I covered an ultra distance, but that was my first ultra experience. It was, it was, I learned a lot, to say the least.
Yeah.
And so when I finished, I think it was I was in the positive temperatures. I think when I finished, I think it was like up to like 4 degrees actual temperature. I'm not sure what wind chill was. So. Oh,
wow. Now you have, really, really put a lot of thought into footwear, right? As far as
for sure.
Types of shoes you're going to, I'm sure you have to because you're a large gentleman and you need to make sure that, you know, your feet are standing up to the pressure. What's your take on footwear?
So for me with anyone, you need to be wearing a shoe with zero offset or as little offset from heel to toe as possible. That doesn't mean a minimalist shoe. Obviously we'd like to work to that point, but something with a zero offset and even just a few millimeters, what that does is that changes again when we run and we do things. That offset that shortens our Achilles. That shortens
what do you mean by chain. An offset? What do you mean by an offset? Just
so from the heel to toe. So a lot of times it's called a zero drop shoe,
right?
And so there's a lot of brands out there. So you want a very minimal offset. A lot of the popular ones you have, like I know Salomon sent me shoes, and there's companies that have sent me shoes, but it's like a 10, 12, sometimes 18 mil offset. Which again, if you think about that distance on a ruler. It doesn't look like that much, but again, those patterns, it can really affect over time, especially if, you know, runners are, that's all they do is run. And so when you get all that repetitive motion stress and those adaptations that happen throughout the kinetic chain, that's going to lead to imbalances and aberrant patterns forming, which lead to injuries. And so, so for me, I went with a zero offset. And so, I wear a brand called Ultra. Now it's not a minimal shoe, but there's no offset from heel to toe. It's also a wider toe box, so your feet can splay, which makes sense. But there's a lot of other companies out there, but having that zero offset, it creates a more biomechanically efficient stride. And, you know, it's, for me, it's one of the big things that I credit with being injury free. Now through that time, you get little bumps and bruises and, you know, things like that, that happen. But most times I would say a statistic I remember is like 70% of runners will go through a season with some kind of injury that will cause them to miss things. And so, the footwear that we choose, and that's even with casual shoes as well, it's always creating patterns. And so we want to put ourselves in the best way possible. And so, so for me, like I said, I'm a huge proponent of that. And even though there's lots of brands out there that I love, that have a more of an offset. I haven't worn shoes with an offset for almost 2 years now, maybe a little less than 2 years. And so, it's just huge. I have the 5-finger shoes as well, but again, minimalist and zero offset or zero drop are two different things. The minimalist is you really have to be careful and work yourself into, because if you're the muscles and ligaments and tendons in your feet aren't used to that, it's going to mess them up. Ideally, you'd like to get to that point because that's going to make you a stronger athlete overall or more resilient to injuries overall. But it's working to that point. So I do have some minimalist shoes as well.
What's the best buy? The best buy for a zero offset shoe out there? Because I know you mentioned a couple, but are there any, like, for somebody who's just getting started and who might not want to spend like a lot of money, what would be the best one?
You know, honestly, so the problem is that, like, with everything else that gets a label, mm-hmm. and becomes popular or mainstream, like, people are going to go for it. And so I give a lot of hooks and discounts and things sent to me, but the best thing to do really is like go to like a TJ Maxx or Marshalls. They have like a Sierra Trading Post, or mm-hmm. you can find anywhere online and get like last season's models of things, like, oh, like nice. Ultras, like you can get them for like 40-50 bucks, which in essence it's the same shoe, it's just a different color, you know, depends on what you're looking for, and just, you know, shop bargains like that online and deals. And so that's really probably the best way, or you can go through like an expert voices, like if you're a veteran, you should have an expert voice or experticity account. If you don't know what that is, like, just Google experticity or expert voice. And what that does is, like, you can get discounts to thousands of companies. And Ultra is on there. There's Innovate. There's a lot of companies on there that you can actually get like 40, 50, 60% discounts.
Oh, wow.
You know, wholesale, retail, you know, like, yeah. So if you're a veteran, all you need is your 214. You black out the thing and you apply, you know, for, they have an Army specific one or a Marine one, a Navy one. Yeah, I guess that's probably the first place to go, because that way you can get all the newest stuff and do that. And you can, I mean, there's everything from hunting, shooting, athletics, I mean, pet care, you know, baby stuff, you name it. It's expert voice.
Experticity.com. Experticity.com.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'll get that. That's probably the best place to go. Very cool. Very cool. I'm actually going to write that down. Yeah, I'm gonna get that up in the show notes for everybody. Now, we've got to sign off in a second, but you know, a couple more questions here about Arsenal of Hope itself. So
where
are you taking Arsenal of Hope? What's your main goal with it?
All right, perfect. So there's a lot of great organizations that do veterans, like, hey, get them out in community and you get them active. The problem is we got to get to the point where we are. And so for me with Arsenal of Hope, and for one of my strengths and in my background is working with that transitional period from your discharge from rehab, or you have a recurring thing, but you don't have PT visits, but almost like corrective exercise, or, you know, it's not quite, in essence, like a physical therapy without actually going to a physical therapist, if you will. Yeah. So corrective exercise or performance training. So, excuse me. So for me, the big pillars of Arsenal of Hope are, one, providing free health coaching to veterans. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether that's the diet, lifestyle, nutrition, habits, it's all free of charge. And so, you know, and you don't have to be in the Detroit area. We can do a lot of this through, you know, WebEx, telemedicine, things like that. I have a pretty wide network across the country as well, people that are getting on board with it. The second is to provide post-rehab training and mobility work to bridge that gap. Okay, yeah, let's say, all right, you had reconstructive surgery, you know, 10 years ago, and you want to get active, but you're not really sure. And okay, well, now we can get you there to a point where your body's in line, you're balanced, and you have a foundation to build on to go from there. So now you're ready to, hey, I can do this run, or I can do this tough mudder, or I can do an ultra. And so we're gonna provide that training for you for free, and then that work for free. And I find that the difference between myself and the people like that we do, and physical therapists and doctors, is that they get a very small time to work with you. When I work clinically, I could spend 3 hours with a person, and those relationships and bonds that help empower people to know what to do to help it themselves, you know, recover, be the best version of themselves, go beyond what they thought was possible. Whether that's teaching people how to walk again, or, you know, people who want to take their sports to the next level. So that post-rehab training, that part is a big proponent. And then adaptive sports coaching as well. If people need that, we'd more than help to put programming and things. And then if you're here in the Metro Detroit area, we can work with you. And then we're also, this is another offshoot, we're working what we call a green team, which is people who want to try to exceed their expectations of themselves physically, psychologically. I was able to run these ultras at virtually no cost to me because I had sponsors. Well, a lot of these events are, you know, ultras, Ironmans, strongmans, whatever you want to do, whatever. It doesn't just have to be running related or endurance related. They're very cost prohibitive. And so the whole point is to get those people that want to do something like that and help figure out a way to offset those costs and mitigate those costs. And so we call it Green Team. And in doing so, we want to inspire other people to go beyond what their limits are. And so, yeah. And then I guess lastly, which is things that we're doing now, is we're actually doing education seminars, mobility and health summits, getting, you know, going out to facilities and working with groups of veterans on a small or large group basis, presenting them with information, ideas, training, whatever it is that they need, help get them over the hump and help them not just over hump, but help them find hope. Because to me, if I could have dropped 50 pounds last year, I would have been happy. But the fact that I'm running ultra marathons, now I have, the whole world is a possibility, which has opened up doors for me to be on, you know, various media outlets or interviews or meeting with high level people or whatever it is, getting sponsors, that's opened the door to a whole bunch of things that we, I know we've talked about previously. And so that's the whole hope, is to give hope where there is none.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And where can people find you and get on to work with you? Are you, I know you have your Arsenal of Hope website. Are you also on social media?
Yeah. So we have the website's arsenalofhope.org. I'm doing my best to become a better webmaster. And so we do have a lot of times there that, there's a blog on there. We follow, do some reviews of things as well. If veterans are interested in things, we have a veterans resource tab where just fill out your info, what you need, and we're going to get you started. Or if you just want more information, we can work that out. And then social media, everything's at Arsenal of Hope. So Instagram, Twitter, there's a Facebook as well, I think. I'm not good with Facebook. I should be. That's something I got to figure out how to do. But a lot on Instagram and Twitter, they're pretty much the same thing. It's just pictures of whether it's whatever it is we're doing, whether it's training, motivational stuff, you're looking for food ideas, whatever it is. Just random things that you see on social media. So, awesome. So that's what we have on our Instagram. So that's at Arsenal of Hope. And we have a podcast also, the Arsenal of Hope podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, and all the other ones. So,
awesome. We'll get all that linked up on the show notes along with Experticity and some of the other resources you have up there. Ben, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank you for the work you're doing and I want to acknowledge you, man. The stuff that you've accomplished is not easy at all. And it takes a good amount of mental strength and fortitude to be able to do these things. So, awesome work. And again, thank you so much for coming on to speak to our crew.
No, I appreciate you having me, Chris. Thank you so much.
Awesome, guys. And for everybody out there, the show notes will be up for this episode. Make sure you go and check them out. Take advantage of some of these resources that Ben talked about. And, get out there, move, push yourselves, and live your best lives while you can.